Alrighty, we are sitting here in the office of Reverend Rafidar Simon, pastor of the African Methodist Church in Kingsville. We are making this interview on Friday, August the 18th. 1989. Brother Simon, what I'd like to do, first of all, is to go back over the little bit of the biographical information. Your correct name is Rafid R. Simon, correct?
Right.
Okay. Let me get a little bit more biographical information from you before we get into to the interview. Can you tell us a little bit about where you're from, where you were born, a little bit about your mother, your father, where they reside, and then we'll move on from there.
Yes, I was born in Ellis County, Texas. That's Waxahachie, the city of Waxahachie, and that is in Ellis County. And I was schooled there. Attended public schools in Waxahachie upon finishing volunteered in the Army, and from there I came back and finished my education in several other universities and colleges. And my mother has passed away, my father's passed away. They also lived in Waxahachie, Texas at the time. Time of my father's death, he was in Waxahachie. My mother was there too, but she passed away in Corpus Christi. She was here, my brother here. Mm-hmm. So that's the extent of what your question you asked.
Great, yeah, that's fine. I try to make these interviews as relaxed and as comfortable for people as possible. So please feel free to just kind of kick back there and talk as if we were talking without a tape recorder. Okay, you came to Kingsville in what year?
1985.
And
4 years in August.
4 years
less this month.
And how did you come upon Kingsville? What had you heard about Kingsville? Have you heard about the community down here before coming down here? Share us a little bit about that.
Well, I knew something about Kingsville, but I didn't know that much about it because I lived in Corpus Christi. Mm-hmm. And I worked for public schools in Centon, Texas. And from there, I left with El Campo as I worked in public schools in El Campo until I retired out of the public school system. And I knew a little about Kingsville, especially the athletic program and other things I heard about them when I was down in South Texas and when I lived here, but I've never been to Kingsville any extended time of period, but was, you know, I was usually moving on, and I was a football coach and moving from sentence after the desegregation. Moved on to El Campo, and then I went into administration back to school, got a degree in administration and counseling. And then that's why I served in administration until I retired out of the system. In our church, the African Methodist Episcopal Church, the church where itinerant elders have to move by the bishop assigned. Bishop signed me to Kingsville in 85, and I came here. We don't know the extent of my tenure. We don't know because I'm an itinerant elder, and that means that after you move, if you're an itinerant elder, Bishop may say in September, when the annual conference will be here, the bishop might say he needs me some other place. So that's where I got to Kingsville. By being a timber elder. I could have gone other places. I don't have any say so that, you know, it's up to the bishop to do that. So that's why I came to Kingsville. I got to come to Kingsville, find a real nice edifice for the church, and the membership was fine. We have on record 106 members, but you know how that is. And we are people are just really nice, and with all the hospitality and our family. We served in El Campo for a number of years, and two churches there, a church in Victoria, and then coming here.
Okay. Share with me a little bit, Brother Simon, about the African Methodist Episcopal Church.
This church was founded out of slavery. Richard Allen, most people have heard about Richard Allen and Absalom Jones and several other ministers, had the privilege of going into the old white church, Methodist Church, that time, St. George. And it happened one day that they decided to go in, they could get in the balcony and go in the back. One day, Richard Allen, after paying for his freedom, decided he wanted to attend church, not up in the balcony and not way back where, but he wanted to pray down at the altar and pray down in the sanctuary. And the ushers came and asked him to leave. And Richard Allen said, "We'll leave after we pray." So they started praying, we will leave. And this was a group of African-American people, not a large group, but it was only five or six, with a few members with them. And they proceeded to bow down and pray. In fact, they were down at the head of us. And the ushers told them to get up and leave. You're not alive down here. And they started praying, and they pulled them up off their knees. And physically moved them out of the church. And doing that, Richard Allen said, "Well, if you don't want us here, we don't want to be here." And they left and went in the blacksmith shop, went across town to the blacksmith shop, and organized this African Methodist Episcopal Church. The name African is African because it's the African heritage, African people created or started the church. And the Episcopal Church, African Methodist, that means we have a church that's that has a method. That's what Methodist, that's what you're talking about. We have a method. Everything we do is, we have a method. And you go to any African Methodist Episcopal Church in the world, we have churches all over in the United States, 18 districts. We have some in Africa, we have a district in Africa, in South America, and in England. And so after doing that, pulling off knees, he went out and started the African Limited by the Episcopals. I said that African Methodist Episcopal Church, Episcopus, that means we have a bishop at the head. And our bishop is housed in an Episcopal residence in Dallas. We had the Episcopal residence in Waco, which we have a school, that was Falkland College. And the bishop always resided there at the Episcopal residence in Waco. But two bishops ago, we had the bishop that said he wanted to live in Dallas, he wanted to live in Waco. So we bought a Episcopal residence in Dallas. So this is where it's called, African Methodist Episcopal Church. That means that it's African descent. It has a method, which is Methodist, and it has Episcopacy, which is a bishop at the head, we have a bishop at the head.
Okay. When you arrived in Kingsville 4 years ago, did you have any preconceived ideas or notions about the black community and how this community interacted with other parts of the community? Or did you come here with an open mind and started to just learn once you got here.
I didn't come with any preconceived notions because I didn't know very much about Kingsville, and I didn't come to move very many mountains. I came to feel around and get self-adjusted to the community and what have you. And I think the thing that I found coming here, that it was a very small percentage of African Americans in this area, which I've been accustomed to quite a few African American people, and it's worked with more than I found it considerably small. And looking at the percentage, I knew that we had our work cut out for us and dealing in terms of civil rights and human rights, and dealing in terms of the spiritual aspect of life. You know, because the church, we had five black churches here, and the population, the percentage of the population being so small, I knew that we had to do our work cut out for us. And I usually, where I pastor, when people ask me how many members you have, whatever, and I tell them 30,000, because that's the population of Kingsville, 48,000. I pastor everybody, you know, that's where I told them that, too. I pastored one church, had 5 or 6 members, and I pastored the whole town, you know. But that's what I do. So I didn't come here with saying I'm going to do this. I didn't even have an agenda, only in the church itself. I always bring my program with me and present it to the church and say, what have you, but as far as the community, so I didn't have any preconceived notions of saying that I'm going to do this in the community, I'm going to do that. But after being there, while I was seeing exactly what was needed in the community, I made myself available to just take on any issue that pertained to our people. So that's where I came with that mind. And so this is what I've been doing 4 years ago. I've been here. And I tend to continue.
Did you find in Kingsville an activist group of blacks? And by that I mean blacks who were addressing grassroots types of issues that related to blacks and to the black community, or did you find a pretty lackadaisical group of people?
What I've been used to as churches, I mean, rural, in all the churches where I pastor, all, regardless of the denomination, we found that most of the churches, all of the churches, They were in the political arena. They were voting. They were getting people to come out to vote. They were active politically. They were active. That's what it was. And it was a larger NAACP branch because we covered a county. We covered Fort Bend County. And I found here that it was a smaller branch. It was moving along and doing some good things, but as far as I was concerned, it was just too few people doing some important things. And I thought we need to broaden that out. So eventually, I took upon myself, I'm one of the members of the branch, it's elected me as the president of the branch, and that's the whole now, president of NAACP. And what I would like to see more is more activity in the churches, because that's where it's going to be. All the agenda's going to be set from the churches, so we can get the people active in the churches and this community. I believe we do far more than what we're doing. And then the whole thing is the question you asked. I see people relaxed and complacent or what have you, but I guess that was just a built-in thing. You know, people are. Had gotten to the point where everything is all right. That's the way I read the community, that they were doing all right, and I didn't want anybody to disturb what they were doing. You know, so, but you run into problems when you get in communities like that, when you are when you're active in human rights and civil rights and things like that, and moving things along, sometimes you're going to have a problem. But it seems to me that maybe by this time, you know, people kind of know what I'm about. And what I'm trying to do is to raise the standard of living for everybody. Mm-hmm. And that's where I stand now. No, I didn't come with any preconceived notions that this is a place that needs to be elevated to some other level. I didn't come with that. We're not coming in like that. I came in here with a Christian attitude, worked with the church, and that the church is together, that the church is working for this. And I think our only hope is an African American church. Mm-hmm. And I think that's our only hope from here as moving up the ladder. And I that's my philosophy, and that's what I believe, and I believe that we can help get the churches to come together and other organizations that's predominantly African American. We can probably do some things that you'd be surprised if we could do in the community.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm going to assume that it would be a pretty fair assessment from what you just said that there are many, many problems, or you found Kingsville to have many, many problems, and you virtually see the church as being the solution to many of those problems, i.e. organizing through the churches, getting the families back in the churches. Is that pretty fair?
Yes. Yes, sir.
Okay, so then there were many, many problems that you found here in Kingsville. Can you and would you elaborate for me specifically the types of problems that you found? You're obviously been used to organizing churches, organizing people around issues. What were some of the real problems that you saw specifically in Kingsville and in the black community?
Well, when I came in, it was what really struck me was the problems that we're having, and this was already on the agenda when I came. We were probably having education, the field of education in this community and in this city. We found that we were having problems with the retention of African American students, even in the university. We didn't have very many students who had them from the beginning, but didn't have any, but one or two getting across at graduation time on the stage. And I saw that we had a problem, a big problem with that, because I started work in the NAACP, and that by that time they had the agenda made, and their agenda set, and their priorities all set. And I got right in there, started working with a few that were working, trying to alleviate some of the problems at Texas A&M University. And we met with the president at that time, we met with the board, we met with everybody else going to the college and university, trying to solve some of these problems. And the first thing I found in this was only one black professor. 6-year history of the school. I found that, and I thought that was something that we could deal with. And we didn't have anybody on a 10-year track at this time. At that time, and even at this time, we don't have any other black professors. Still have one black professor. No full-time instructors, a few part-time. I said, well, maybe this is a problem here we need to address. And so we did. We went to, and we looked at the affirmative action book of the university, and it seemed like they knew the problem, and they had mailed into the Justice Department the problems that they were aware of, and saw that there was an area where they were short of African Americans. It was pointed out in this booklet, and we worked out on that, and we tried to bring it up, and then some of the other things that we talked about, not only that, the retention of student, we talked about recruiting, and the recruiting problem was something that was not even up to par with something that was, I couldn't see how in the world I could possibly think of getting any black instructors are getting everybody on a tenure track in university with it, and the recruitment was as bad as it was. So we worked on that, and we're still working on that. We're still continue to work on that until we get some things done as far as retention, as far as tenure, as far as getting blacks on all committees at the university. We don't have any blacks on important committees at the university. And some of the things that may be happening to the African-American students that's enrolled in the college, we look at that. And other things we talked about, we met with the Educational Board of Higher Education in Austin. We met with the board here, the South Texas Board. We met with the university administration, and all of them. We're still doing that. We're still going to continue to do that because we think we can get by through recruitment and through retention and through getting not only recruiting students. So we do a good job recruiting athletes, but we need to recruit some professors and recruit some instructors in the school. Because, in fact, I'm a strong believer. See, I worked in the public school system for over 35 years, and I'm a strong believer in the fact that if you don't have some models in the church for our children, I mean in the schools, I beg your pardon, for our children, I think we're losing ground. See, every race needs models. And the same thing in high school here and all the other schools, we just don't have anything too much. And I think that's one of the, in this whole equation of talking about dropouts in schools and what, I think somewhere in this equation, we're going to have to find common ground for getting people to all races integrated into the system. The public school system as well as our education. And, that's why I feel about it. And this is why we're going to continue to work until we get some people, get some African Americans, and not only that, in the workplace in the city, women do that. The service sector in the city, we just don't have any blacks. The city with almost 30,000 people, not African American on the police force, not African American in downtown in the courthouse. African American, even on the faculty at one of the high schools. You know, these kinds of things, these are human problems. And you need to address these problems, let people know where we stand about this problem. There's no reason why, regardless to it, we're only 2%, but we're human, you know. And you say we don't have the caliber type of people that they want in these places. Well, you go out and recruit those folks, you go out and bring those people in. That's what we're not looking for. Everybody in Kingsville to have a master's or PhD or whatever, but somebody somewhere would like to come in and work. See, you ask me those kind of questions, I talk too much, but that's the way I feel. You know, that's what I feel. We have to do something about that. We talk with the city and find out even with the percentage we have, we should have 15 people or African American descent that's working in the city. In city government, we only have 3. And we should have 15 according to percent, only if we look at percent wise. Same thing everywhere else, going down the line. So we look at percent, we won't look at percent, we'll take that, yes, we'll look at percent. Right? Now let's bring it up. We need 15 people working in city government, let's find 15 people working in city government. If we have to go out and recruit every other city that I know of, had to go out and recruit people. That's what Kathy Whitmire in Houston had to go to Atlanta and get the chief of police. Like she went and got him, recruited him, another thing, you know. So this kind of thing, and all other mayors, all other people in the city government, and in education. And we need to get some people, let's recruit and let's go out and get them and bring this thing up where it should be. We'll find a lot of different. Or as a dropout, when you even stop talking about dropouts until we get this corrected. Okay. So needs corrected.
Talk with me a little bit about the race relations in Kings Hill. as you perceive it. I'm talking specifically about blacks and Hispanics, blacks and Anglos. You've talked about the problem, many of the problems manifestation of some of the problems. Share with me a little bit about the conditions in Kingsville 4 years ago and today between the races. Do we have a working relationship with Hispanics in Kingsville?
Well, this is a few months ago that we just don't have, and dealing with a work relationship, we just don't have enough African Americans in the workplace to even address that, because we just don't have it. When you talk about one professor at the university, how can we wait? And then when you're talking about one in African American descent in other places, in the workplace you don't see any. You might see them in one or two of them, grocery stores or something like that, but you don't see them any of them, really in the workplace. And as far as relationship, now and 4 years ago when I came here, I don't see very much change. I don't see very much change. Like I said from a few minutes ago, what we're going to have to do is take care of these problems that we have. As far as work, we're going to get some people in the workplace, get some people working in banks and everything else, all federal establishments and post office and that way. So we're going to have that. Then we can find out about the relationship, the race relationship in the workplace and wherever it is.
Kingsville, up to this point, we have a Hispanic as city manager, and with a minority heading up one of the largest institutions in the city, you would think that there would be inroads for other minorities, some empathy on the part of that individual. Do you see Hispanics in power, in situations where they have some authority, a little bit of power, being sensitive to the needs of minorities, or are they totally overlooking that aspect of the city and the...
Somewhere in our handouts, our literature, letters, correspondence, somewhere in there we made a statement that, and this statement was this, that what we found, not only in the branch of the WCP branch, but personally what we found was that when it comes to defining minorities, blacks are not in that definition. They're left out of this definition for some reason. And it seems like it's not working into the fact where we could define minorities as a minority. But now, in the new definition that I found, the new definition is excluding blacks altogether from African Americans.
Okay, we were talking a little bit about the definition of minority, excluding blacks, and you were starting to give your.
If you look at what I was talking first, if they're going percentage wise, they're saying that we are 2%, and I thought it was more than that, but saying 2%, and the other group is about 53 or 54%. And if we're looking at dealing with, if we're getting a fair shake, we have to include African Americans in this definition. There's no way if we have to have an equation with if it's one-sided, we have to do some transposing. If you have a equation, you got the negative and minuses on one side of the equation, and you want to balance the thing, you got to put all negatives on one side and all positives on the other. That's transposing. If you're talking about dealing with bringing things to a head, bringing things to a head, what a powerful force it would be if the minorities were to get together. But it's
a small part of the population. And I believe the tape stopped there.
Yeah, just a minute. I don't want to mislead anybody on this because we're small in the population. What I want to say is we're only 2%, but we're human. We're going to keep that in mind, and we need to be treated just like any other minority, anybody else, or any other majority. We need to be treated that way. We're human then. But sometimes people kind of use that for a crutch and use that because you don't have enough people. I think we do. I think we have enough people, African American people, and it's time to make a change. And that change needs to come. Time is running out. Okay.
Just a moment ago, you talked a little bit about the church being the solution to the problem. Would you expand on that a little bit?
Well, it seems to me that if we're going to do anything productive in the political field, and in other areas, it's going to take, because this is where it started in the church. Mm-hmm. The NAACP came out of the church. All of our leaders relied on the church. All of our organizations, yes, CLC and all NAACP and all other organizations started in the church. And I believe the church is going to be the place where we're going to make some inroads. And I believe the church is going to be a place where we can organize all of the churches organized around the civil rights issue, human relations issue, any other issue. All of it started in the church. Now, we've had some casualties. We had in the church, in our church, in the southern cities, nine of black children were killed, bombed, but it organized, started in the church. The movement in Alabama started in the church, Martin Luther King, everything. So I still have that kind of nonviolent attitude that I place a lot of stock in the church. Not spiritually. I know that's the way to go, and definitely as far as what we're going to do in the community. Yes, we need the NAACP. We need human relations commissions. We need all of these things. But ultimately, when we come right down to it, if the churches close their doors to our movement and what we're doing, we have no other alternative but to toward the streets or some other place. So, where are we now?
So, you see the church as being the way back to getting back for the community,
right.
Black community, black community in Kingsville specifically, to get back on track. Let me ask you this. We have lost, when I say we, I mean black America. Desegregation brought about certainly some good changes, but blacks lost a great deal. The churches come to mind. After desegregation, we started seeing blacks cross over and enter into black churches. We saw the electronic media, the mass media, start to take on a rainbow coalition, if I can borrow that term, and blacks started to move away from their historical black churches to white churches. Has that hurt the cause?
What I see in that is, you know, back in the movement, back in the civil rights movement, we had sufficient numbers of African Americans on the wall. I made that statement, you know, and that those watchmen on the wall was watch, and they were to point out discrepancies, and segregation, and all these things that. Civil rights, but as you said, I see recently that we're losing those watchmen on the wall, and that's affecting our effectiveness. You know, we're losing too many valuable people. They're just dropping out. If you notice it on a national scale, you see some of these people moving away from the movement and. Talk about bipartisan and talking about I don't want to be in the black church. I don't want to do that. But I think the movement. I can't see a church closing its doors to a civil rights organization. I just can't deal with that. And I think if it gets down to where most of them move away from the black church, I still think that black church. It's going to be, regardless of the number of people, they all might leave. But regardless of the number of people left, I think they're going to have to. I think they're going to have to hold the line, and I think that's where it's going to be. And if churches have got to the point, for African American churches have got to the point now where they don't want to deal with the problems in our cities and deal with the problems, the human problems, if they've gotten to that point. I can't see it. Me myself as a minister, I can't see myself standing in the pulpit preaching about all these things and not to be human conscience. I just can't see myself doing that. When my brother and sister is in trouble, I'm in trouble. When there's somebody on the phone then, you know, for some help, but when they're in trouble, I'm in trouble. That's where you're gonna have to look at. That's where every minister's going. That's where every leader is a minister's leader in the community. The minister's leader. And if he sees things negatively for civil rights movement and human rights movement, if he sees that as being un-Christian, where does he come from? I'm saying that. That's Jesus. I'm following Jesus. And that's where he felt that people need help. Wherever it was, but you notice Jesus where he was. When he was talking to the farmers, he talked about farming. He talked about healing, he was talking to sick folk, he was healing people. Whatever he's talking about, that's what he dealt with. So if you go in the community and you see people suffering, people with not any affordable housing, if you see people sick, if you see people hungry, that I think is a ministry. Job is to try to alleviate some of these problems. And whenever a minister, I don't care how large the church is, refuses to get in the movement, deal with these problems, I think he's missing part of his ministry.
You have been labeled by some in the community as a mover and a shaker. Being a minister, and as well as the president of the NAACP, has that created any animosity between you and any of the other pastors in the community, your congregation? Has it isolated you in any way?
If it is, I can't feel it. I haven't noticed it yet. Because I don't think one person in my congregation would tell me I couldn't be the president of the NAACP. In fact, most of my members are members of the NAACP. Most of the officers in this branch are members of my church, and they are there in the fight. They see what I'm doing, and they stand ready. Whatever I'm saying. Standing there to go out and do it. And it's far as the ministers, I don't see it's only but only two ministers that two other African American ministers that ministers. I haven't seen anything in that other than I need that support. Mm-hmm. I need that support if I'm going to.
You don't have their support.
Not fully yet. Not fully. You have to have everybody's support. And that's not only taking out a membership in the NAACP. I mean, getting in the fight, getting out in the grassroots, getting down to the point where we're working together as brothers to get things done. You know, not isolate themselves. But often we don't get that now because they have their philosophy, ideas, and I'm not criticizing them. You know, I'm not saying I need their help. And if they believe that this is sinful, if they believe helping people or something or politics or something they want to bring to the church, that's that problem. I don't be criticizing, but I'm just saying we need to look at it. If we look at it from a standpoint of helping people, we look at the standpoint of here we are. What can we do? You know, we got people suffering. We got people need housing. We got people being convicted. We got people. You know, we're going to have to take up. We're going to take a cross. So that's we do it daily. We can't do it. That's carry once or twice. But I don't have any problem with any of my members being toward me as far as being out there leading and out there being the president of the NAACP. I know once upon a time, even before I came to Pinkville, it was people were afraid to even join the NAACP. I mean, if they had a job, that meant that the job would no longer be if they found out they were members of the NAACP. That was a dirty name. But now I found all of this nation everywhere now. That's changed drastically because people don't look at it that way. I mean, they don't look at it. But I hope they don't have that attitude that maybe it's going to hurt that church, or maybe some of the members in the church will lose that job. I think we're past that. I think we're on another chapter now. We're not dealing with that kind of thing where your job might. So I think what the leaders need to do is to let the people know, because since I've been in Kingsville, I've had African Americans tell me that they can't work in the NAACP for fear of a job, for fear of this, for fear of that. They don't even want their name to be known. Be publicized because they won't let their name go in the paper or anything else as a member of the NAACP. But the NAACP is an organization now where we have all races. You know, one time when you get that name of NAACP, and when you get that, I've had people of other races come up to me since I've been the president of this branch. Ask me if they could become a member of this branch, and you know that kind of that stigma is still here. That thing is still here, and it's still here for us, the African Americans. It's still there because they'll take out a membership, but they won't come to a meeting, and all this kind of thing. And a lot of that is fear, and we're trying to get that out, let people know, and then we get back to what I said a few months ago. The black minister in the community is a He doesn't know the power he wields. He doesn't know the power he has as far as dealing with African American people. Regardless to, you know, what we think about it, and most of that congregation will follow that minister. You know, but if we have a minister getting in the pulpit telling people that NAACP is this and that, all negative things, we have some problems. But not all of them, you know, of our problems are unsolved. We can go on do it if we had people together, but we're gonna have to do that. I think salvation of human being is Jesus Christ. You know, I know that's salvation, but salvation of this country, the loneliest city, salvation. I think still resting in the black church, as far as African Americans are concerned.
I'm still. We've talked a great deal now about the church and the role of the black church in the community and some of the problems centered around organizing and moving forward. And I guess I'm still not really clear in terms of understanding how you're perceiving the real the overall black picture as you know blacks relate specifically to the churches. Let me ask you in another way. You certainly are reaching part of the blacks in the community via the church. What about those blacks outside the church that's lost, I don't know if we want to call it faith, maybe it's confidence, lost the any type of any reassurance that the church is the way. How do you deal with those? How would you address dealing with that aspect of our community?
Okay. The answer to that question is going to reinforce what I just said. This is definitely going to reinforce it because any ministry, any human being with a ministry, a minister, in the 1990s, going into the 21st century, his ministry would have to be broadened. No longer we can no longer come on Sunday and preach a sermon and go back home. We can't do that in the church. And we're going to have to broaden the ministry's ministry. It's going to have to be so broad it will take in the dropouts, the religious dropouts. You know, people dropping out of churches like dropping out of school. Religious dropouts and young men. Young men, those who mean young women, young men on the streets. Our ministry will have to somehow reach out and bring those folk in. It's not all the time bring them into church. Might be some ministry that you can start that will include them if it's a meeting at the park, if it's playing basketball, if it's playing tennis, some ministers going to have to include those people that's out there that's lost faith. And we have a number of them in Kingsville. You just have to ride through the streets and see this. They dropped out of school, they dropped out of the church, and they dropped out of all activities. You know, they just existed. But I think every church, and if we can reach out, and we should, as Christian brothers and sisters, and we have to get away from the notion that it's something bad, it's something wrong, it's something that can't be handled when we see so many people that dropped out and down on the street. So somewhere, you know, it's a risky business, but somebody's going to have to go down, somebody's going to have to get to include them in the ministry. And we need to. And you do that, it's going to take faith, it's going to take, we're going to have to believe what we're doing. Well, we sometimes have a problem. We don't believe that, you know, it's so they're gone, so be it. Goodbye. We take an attitude sometimes, somewhere. But we're going to have to reach out. And our ministers going to have to include those people that's not unchurched. We're going to have to include them somewhere. And this is what I try to do. I try to do it, you know. I tell my members, you know, don't ever. If somebody walks off the street in the church, I tell them, don't ever run them off. Or even tell them they can't come in. Now, if he's liberated or something like that, let me talk with him. That's no time. So we don't have that. You know, they come in all the time, you know, looking for help off the street. We're going to have to include those folks. So that reinforces what I said. Because that church, if we don't reach out to the unchurched, then we're going to have some real problems. Because most of the people in the church is awakening on a minority. Most of the people are not in church. And this is the problem we have when we say, well, we got congregations in our community that's not even thinking about civil rights. They don't even know what prison is, you know, something. You know, you think about, they're not thinking about this thing. But when you have that type of situation, then you got the problem. The problem will maximize. It's going to come to the problem. Most of the people, most young people are going to lose hope. And we need to rekindle hope in these people. Rekindle this hope is by encouraging them to get in the NAACP. Encourage them to, you know, when the doors open, the challenge of the doors opening, be ready to walk in it. The door open and we're going to have everybody to walk in the door. And we're going to tell them, you know, we love them. But we don't know what you're doing. You're going to have to get ready to do this. And it's a deeper problem. See, back to the education systems. If you don't get these type of things, you know, let me start off by saying, I worked on both sides of the fence. The socialized fence, I worked on both sides of it. And I worked in all segregated, I mean segregated, system in the school. So then I worked on the partially desegregated system. And I know it from both angles. And some things that we got away from as far as African Americans, I mean, we need to go back and reach back and get that. We need to reach back and get their family structures, you know, and all this. We need to get back and get to some mores, folk ways that we can deal with like we did in back in those days, even when we were struggling. Some things came out of struggle that we need to get back and get it. Because we're going to do it ourselves. Nobody's going to do it for us. Mm-hmm. And we need to do it. We need to do that. We need to do that in the church. And we need to take the people. One young man from down there on the streets, you know, he said, Reverend, I want to, will you come down and talk with us? Daniel said, yeah, when you want me to come down there? So we're trying to get some of the fellows together we just want you to come and talk with us. I said, you name the date, you name it, and I'll be there. I'll come any time, any night, and I've been down there. So this is what we're going to do. We're going to accept that challenge. When, you know, folks come, you know, I don't care what they look like and how they're dressed or whatever, you know. We don't look down on anybody in this church. You come to this church. We don't look down. So that's what we're going to do. We're going to let the people know that we're concerned about them. Most of the folk out there think, well, the churches, you know, they don't care anything for us. And we have problems. We're going to solve the problem by taking these people in. Mm-hmm. I know we have revivals here. You know, we have unchurched, and everybody else takes some in. And some we don't get. We've got to keep fishing, though. We've got to keep going to get them in. And the whole thing is not to try to get everybody in one church, you know. So I won't call them. You got to forget the denominations. You're going to have to forget the people that's in the congregation. You're just going to have to do that. So what I see here, back again, it's kind of strengthened my position in the first place. Our ministries, not our ministers, our ministries in the church would have to be brought to include everybody.
Let me mention a few perceived social problems in America, and I'd like you to just speak on them specifically as they relate to Kingsville and our black community. Drugs.
Well, this is what I think on that. I think we're fumbling the ball. I think as a nation we're fumbling the ball. And we're looking at it. We got a lot of people now. And by the way, the on the 5th this month, the proposal coming out of the president's cabinet. And we're going to have to come up with some way to cut off the supply and cut down on demand. And we're going to have to take the money out of it. There's too much money involved in these things. And whenever a 12-year-old kid can tell you that they can make more money than you, and you're a preacher, you know, you're a school teacher, I can make more money than you. I don't understood. We got problems. So as I see, and we're gonna have to come out of Washington D.C. where it's mostly African Americans, and paint a picture that maybe look like only people that's doing drugs and a black folk. This is not a black problem. This is a problem for this whole nation, this whole world. But we kind of got off track by using Washington, D.C. as a model and saying, this is what we're going to do. We're going to clean up Washington, D.C., but you need to clean up the world. That's the world problem, and especially and particularly in the United States. And I see where it is breaking down the society, and we're going to lose this battle. We're going to lose this battle if we fail to follow the hew the line and long line, but most of the people are talking about it's going to have to be some resources involved and a lot more than what's involved now to do this. And back to the church. The church is going to get involved and try to do something about the addiction and try to send back to people hooked on the social network and dealing with. Dealing with the problem in Kingsville or any other city, I think it's going to be a concerted effort. It's going to be the church, going to be an organization, and parents, and concerned citizens. And it's going to work to come together before we can do anything constructively against the drugs. And it is an epidemic. It's a problem. And we know how to work together on it. Start early. You can't wait until a youngster get to junior high school. We ain't gonna talk about it. We're gonna do somebody's problem. We're gonna do somebody's problem before then. And I think church is back again. The church is gonna have to get this in the church. They're gonna set up youth meetings in the church, counselors in the church, and they're bringing people in with expertise. Bring people in, have people on the streets, and have people in the homes. Everybody's going to get concerned there. But we make a dent in it because it's too much money involved. Too much money. It's going to take money to do what we need to do. It's going to take money. Might as well face it. I know all of us, most of the people in America, are all committed to no taxes, no this, no that. But we're going to get some money from somewhere. If we intend to practice properly. I think it's economic, and if you're not careful, you make it racial, and then we got a problem.
Teenage pregnancy.
That goes back, I'm a believer of sex education in schools, and I believe that's a starting point. It's a shame that these are teenage girls who have to learn all the ways of life out there in the street. They have to learn it, and they get out there, and they come up pregnant, then we want to have all the abortions and everything else in place at that time. But I think the parents need to do some work on that, too, and I think in the school system. We can't put it all in the school system. We can't. But all these dropout problems, drug problems, and all this in the school system. As I said a few minutes ago, it's going to be a concerted effort with everybody, churches and organizations and everything else. And I think what we need to do is, maybe back in the olden days, back in the school, what we would do in school, so we didn't know anything about sex education. We didn't know what we were doing, but we were doing something. But what I would do, a small school where I work, I was a coach, and those kids looked up to me, and I then had the lady coach, and looked up. What we would do every week, she would take all the girls in athletics and any other place, and I would take all the young men, and I would go out in the gym. She would go in another part of the gym or into some place. and we would have a discussion. I mean, we would get right down to everything that we want to talk about. And we would do that once a week. And I know it's a far cry from that today, you know, they don't do that. They don't. I think, and the parents sometimes come up and be in the discussion with us. If the girls over there talking about the steps of things in life and the reproductive things in life, that the lady and the woman of the school or faculty and the parents would be right there. And the PTA was involved, and everybody else. But now, you know, it's just free everything.
Teenage pregnancy, and you were sharing with us some of the ways that we might have to try to deal with it, and just some of the problems that are related to teenage pregnancy. How are the institutions, you think, in Kingsville dealing with the black teenage woman or youngster in terms of this whole teenage pregnancy issue? Are the institutions set up to deal, the council, blacks, black women, black youngsters, black youth?
No, I don't think they are, because since I've been here, I've seen several teenagers expecting mothers. And I'm not sure I don't want to insinuate that the school is fault, you know, but I want to say, let's go. Come in.
Okay, we were talking a little bit about the institutions in Kingsville, and you were starting to talk a little bit about some of the problems that black youngsters have in their interacting with those within those institutions.
I think what we need to do is to make a dent in this whole thing. And I'm going back to this again. We're going to have to include. I know some people will say, "Well, anybody should do this. A professional can do this." We're going to have somewhere in the school system some black counselors and black instructors. We're going to have to do that because a lot of the blacks just don't understand the teachers that they have. The teachers don't understand me. So that you pass it, I'm not talking about the language barrier, but I'm talking about just don't understand each other. And that's what I see, you know what I'm saying? And if some way, I don't have to come up with some blacks somewhere that blacks can relate to and go to and talk to. Well, we got counsel. Experience counsel, all that, well, that's all right. But still, we're going to do that if we intend to get to some of these hard problems. I was coaching football in a black school, and the kids would come to me before they would go to their parents. They would come to that, the lady coach, with girls would go there, would come in the lady school, they would go there and talk with this coach. And then the parents, and then they would call the parents in and get them down. I would do the same thing. You know, I have young men that finished and played football with me all over the state of Texas. And they walk right in this office right now and say, "Thank you for what you did for me. Put me on the right track." I had some time put a bit on the right track in a little rough way. But at that time we could do that, but now that's all kind of law now. Helen and all that, but this is what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. They're gonna have to be in some responsible places. Like, well, we need classroom teachers, but in counseling and shaping lives, we're gonna have to have. It's far cry now for people to people to think that we're so integrated. Mm-hmm. We're so integrated that it doesn't make a difference. I hear a lot of this. It doesn't make a difference. Let me teach you. They ought to learn. And then you're going to have to get the right kind of African American counselor. You might get one of African American as we all. You know, I'm saying just put African American everywhere. I'm talking about one and really get to the student. Yeah. And that student going to respect it, that student going to love it, that student going to come to that person with the problems. Yeah. And that's what we need, somebody to do it.
When you say way off, a black who is way off, can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, you have some black folk that got caught up in this thing with integration, they're going right down the line, and I'm not saying it should get out of the system, but a lot of times the system needs to be corrected. But I'm saying that at the point where they're thinking the same thing, now we got a problem of a black coming to judge a cheerleader in this system, and the black judge hard on the white student and other judges. So this kind of thing, I'm not talking about she was an official. I'm just talking about her expectancy level might have, probably was higher than the other judges. That could be the problem. She expected the blacks to do better than the other people. But why would you think that way? But that's what I'm talking about, just like that. And intentionally good. I'm not saying it's a poor teacher, it's a poor judge. I'm just saying, and sometimes you get African American teachers expectancy level is too low for blacks. So it's going to be some right between that too low and too high. It's going to be some in there that the teacher, instructor, that counselor, that coach, whatever it is, can get to this black student. And you see the dropout rate. Do you know we're sitting here right now, 4,000 students a day is going to drop out of school next year. They're not all black, but 38% of them. They're going to drop out of school. That's goodbye, I'm gone. They come up with all kind of tests and all kind of everything else. I don't know how much good it's doing, but, we need to have somebody, if we're going to go to the testing room, we have to have somebody to get down with that student and tell that student, this is it. You're going to have to get it. Like I said, I worked in one. And then all black schools were segregated. I mean, it was segregated. We didn't even go across town, it was segregated. Everything was segregated. We didn't even, we weren't included in the budget. It was segregated. I'm talking about segregated. And we had some teachers and instructors that were concerned, that would stay there all day and all night, that would go by the house after school, we got some situation now where the head coach never seen a football player until practice time. And I was coaching, I was in the home. I was everywhere. Practice time, after practice time, that's it. I see you last practice, I see you Friday on the football field at the game. We got this situation, and you're going to have to be at this coach. You're going to have to be, and I was just like, and they looked on me, just like, ready, you didn't come to me, problem, whatever. And I'm not saying I was all of it. I'm not saying that I was much better than anybody. Person, but I'm talking about simple stuff. What I'm talking about, you don't have to have too much savvy, to do these kind of things. This is simple stuff that I'm talking about. We're going by the house, checking with the parents, checking with that student. And I'm getting something to say. We had a curfew. We had a curfew, man. You didn't see anybody football players play with me at 10 o'clock at night out there on the streets. And I didn't have to go down there on the streets. But the captain of the football team would go down there. Captain of the football team go down there. If there's anybody down there on the football team, they'd see him coming. They would run like a scared rabbit. Didn't want to see him because they practice what they're going to have to do. They're going to have to put some pressure on them. They're going to have to stay a little while after the scrimmage. So all these kind of things. I think what we need to do is look at these things. Well, some of these educators, they might say, well, this won't work today, but how do you know? It might work. Why don't you try it? Why don't you try some of these things? And I think some of these things in school, what we're doing, would have. And this teenage pregnancy bill is going to have some mothers and some women in the school that these children can confide in and talk with, and you know, some parents these girls can't talk with. And they, like I said, they're going to come to a person that they confide in, a person that they respect. Or, you know, they respect the parents, but not that much. The way they're going to go up and tell them, well, I'm going out tonight, and I think I'm pregnant. Mm-hmm. You're not going to go up and tell them that.
Okay, you've pretty much touched on the other problem that I wanted to talk on, and that was education and the dropout rate. Let me ask you, we look at police relations and the relationship between police and community. How would you characterize the relationship between the Kingsville Police Department and the Black community, Sheriff's Department and the Black community? How would you
characterize it as unfinished agenda. I don't care what kind of chief quarters you get, if it's not integrated situation, you have problems. Like, yeah, maybe I'm, you know, getting on slip too heavy, but I think just a black police, I mean a real police, going through a community, African American community, does a lot. Just going through there. And I mean, real police. That's really helping and doing what it's supposed to do with real police. I think we have to, you know, like I say, the agenda's unfinished, and what we need to do is look at maybe desegregating all of these institutions. Say that desegregated, but how can you have a sheriff department without a black owner? How could you have a city police department and not even a janitor department? How could you have city council with not a black owner? How could you have a city government with only three blacks? It goes back to the point where people are saying, well, we just don't have any blacks in Kingsville. We don't have any qualifying blacks in Kingsville. It's called, you know, it's people walking the street looking for a job, you know. That's qualified. Recruit those folks and get them in. Back to the whole thing, you know. They can easily say and put it on paper, and it looks good on paper. That the percentage of blacks not where it should be. We don't have any blacks at. And then that make that look good. You know, so we can't find any blacks. That's what they're trying to get around that thing. We don't have it. What I'm saying is, move outside of Wisconsin and recruit some people. Go to New England. Go somewhere. Go to Houston. Go to Chicago. Anywhere, you know. One of my jobs, Rutsford, when I was in the school system, every year, I would go to every black university or college whenever they would have seminars, and they would have forums, and they would have graduating seniors to meet the recruiters, and we would go in there. There are people there from Michigan. People there I interviewed a person from Michigan trying to get her to come to Texas for a job. Mm-hmm. And she was willing to come. In fact, I brought the application back to the superintendent and board, and if they responded, I don't know, but I know we don't know. But that's what we had. We would go there and we would recruit and we would find teachers. We would let teachers know. And we would have everything laid out for us. And the salary, the school system, the size of the school system, the number of students, all some of the problems and some of the things in the city, some of the social activities. We'd have all that there, and we would be talking to the people. But now it seems like we just rely on somebody to walk in off, you know, anyway. Just walk in and say, I want a job. But if we intend to desegregate all of these institutions, we're going to have to recruit. We're going to have to go get folk. As large as Houston is, that's a daily task for them, going out looking for people all over this nation. I want you to say most of the cops I know, the chief of police, Lee Brown. I know he's black. Ain't nobody, no question about that. He's black, and I can say, let's go with my recruiting him. Henry Q recruited black policemen all over his state. And I bet you to say a large percentage of those policemen right there in Houston, they were somewhere else. They're not people out there in Houston, not 3 million people. But the smaller towns, the smaller cities, they're going to have to go through recruitment more so than the larger cities because of the percentage, because of the, you know, if it's in a place where Hispanics are smaller in percentage than anybody else, go somewhere else and recruit some Hispanic. There's some cities in the state that not very many Hispanics in. But if you're in a city where there's a small percentage of Hispanics and you don't have any Hispanics in the police department, the sheriff's department, anywhere else, I venture to say somebody will go get some. Go out there and recruit some folks. Why is it so hard to recruit blacks? Somebody said, well, they don't want to come to Kingsville. Somebody said, well, the salary is not right. Well, the living condition is not right. But recruit other folk, and it's all right with them. That's what I said on that. You know, the whole thing is desegregation. The whole thing. All these departments, all these school systems, is desegregation. I mean total. Mm-hmm. I don't mean total. I don't want to put about that for total. I mean, you got to desegregate. Mm-hmm. And that's the problem we have not only in Kingsville, we have a problem anywhere where we're dealing with percentages.
Mm-hmm. Does racism still exist in Kingsville? And if so, overtly or covertly, is it?
Well, yeah. Yes. In some cases, overtly, some cases, covertly. You know. And it's not only Kingsville, all of this nation. We're dealing with that now. We're dealing with some problems. You know, some problems of racism. There were some problems that blacks, even though it's not on the blacks, and some blacks don't want to be integrated with some others. But this thing is really hurting. This thing is really hurting this nation, and we need to get ourselves rid of all of racism wherever it raises its ugly head. We need to get rid of it, get racism, but it still exists. And it's, you know, I think anybody will tell you, you know, it's. It's racism. I think everybody can hide that. You know, you can see it. Dealing with that, if you notice in all of the systems, it's a nation of systems and school systems, all they were kind of systems. You know, they were just systems. And all of these systems, from the administration, federal, on down, is going to have to look at desegregation. And wherever they find racism in these places, they're going to have to get rid of it. And somebody seem to be happy with it. You know, how different races are treated. And not only African Americans, but the different races. And we're going to have ourselves a country that's powerful and fluent, and hope for it to be, we're going to have to look hard at this problem of racism in this country, in these cities, in these towns. We're going to have to look hard.
When you first got to Kingsville, did you know that you were in the black community, per se? Was there any giveaway that this boundary from Kennedy to Caesar to Armstrong to 3rd Street
right.
was a black area?
Right. You can tell in any city you go in. You can find the black areas, and that's from gerrymandering. And putting blacks in increases out of gerrymandering, and that's what they're doing now.
Okay, you had just started to talk about gerrymandering and how blacks, not only in Kingsville, but in other parts of the country, are steered to certain areas of town. Can you, do you want to continue on that?
Yes. When you're talking about the African-American community, usually what they have a dividing line, the track, you know. So across the track, most African Americans across the track, and it's out of history. It's a long history of this city. That's where we've been all the time. A few of them move out and get out, but the majority of the blacks remain in that area. And it's like here, you know, when you get across, when you turn off King Street, you know where you are. So you know this is a black community. It's not all the time a place where it's unkempt. It's not all the time a place where, you know, abandoned property, all these things would show up as in there. We have that all over the city. But it's something about the black community, it's something about the streets, it's something about the lighting, it's something about the housing, it's something about will let you know time you hit a city that you're in a black neighborhood. And that's not King. You go Houston, you know it's good when you're in Fifth Ward or Fourth Ward or where it's predominantly black, where it's all black. You know in all these cities. Yeah, it's economic, it's lifestyle, it's all these things go with it. Just the character. Just the way the property is kept, it's with this thing. So once again, you know, we have some of the same situations in all parts of the city here, but you can tell when you're coming back. Not the black communities, and that's a blight. That's something that it should be. We got large cities in Texas. We got large cities in Texas. In black neighborhoods, the streets are not paved. Places where we don't have, but somehow we got all the streets painted here. But still, you can tell when you're in the African American community. Even though you don't see many on the street, you can still tell. I see.
Okay, Brother Simon, we're just about to wrap up here. Let me ask you, are there any areas that you would like to share with us? Any areas we haven't covered here today that you feel deem important enough to want to talk about? Please do so if you.
I think what we're trying to do now, in the direction of the mayor of the city, we're trying to establish a human relations commission, which is needed in all cities, needed here. And I think we need the citizens and politicians and all these elected officials should put all of their energies in trying to develop this mission, because I think it'll be heaven or some of these organizations can't be. I think the commission will be so interwoven with the city commission, county, and with the government, city and county governments, they would be so close to it, and the mission can live on it, going from the communities, all the communities in this city, this county, from people, there's a lot of times people in position, a lot of times the commissioners, a lot of times the governor, I mean the mayor of each part. The mayor is not aware of what's going on. Say, for instance, in the Hispanic community, in the Black community, in the Caucasian community, they're not aware, but you got somebody there, somebody there watching, somebody there sitting, somebody there having forums and talking with people, and having meetings with people in these different communities. And we can put our hands on some problems, and we can go right on to the mayor, right up to the top. This commission can be a human, if we find any human relation problems, and we'll find enough to keep us busy in this city. I think that's one thing I think of. But we need to work on it. We didn't cover that in this. We're trying to formulate this commission now. We get it together, I think, and in all aspects. I mean, this will cover a broad spectrum. This will cover all the things that we didn't cover. This commission will do that. Because there'll be in education, there'll be in housing, there'll be in labor. We have five different things we're pinpointing that we're going to deal with. And this is our agenda. We're going to do this. We're going to deal with that. Housing problems, we're committed to look into that. If we have problems with education, problems with school, human problems, human relations problems in school, all these things we went over. We're talking about segregating the schools, desegregating the schools. Desegregating the school. We've talked about that here. And this commission could deal with that. Could deal with education, housing, and labor, and all these things we have. We can let that city know. So we're working on this. We're working on this every week. We're working hard on this to get this formed. We're making some changes. But I think we're making so that's one aspect that we didn't cover. I think we hit all the bases and dealing with in this interview. But if there's anything else you think of, you want to ask me, feel free to do it. Okay.
I think that we've pretty much covered all bases here, and I'd like to just thank you for taking your time and certainly taking the time out of your busy schedule to sit down and do this interview with us. Just like to again thank you on behalf of Joe Graham and Dr. Green and Tony Bouquet out at the university, and I hope that the remainder of your stay in Kingsville is a productive one.
Well, I appreciate that, and thank you very kindly for thanking me for this interview. So I was happy to do it, and if I missed anything, then I would like to do some follow-up, I'll be available.
Thank you very much.
Okay.